You know, Dustin, your dog Madison just irritates me.
Are you kidding me right now?
Need to get rid of her. Yeah.
She's probably the freaking best dog you've ever come across.
Right, yeah. I don't think so.
No?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how about I get rid of you?
Don't go there with me because, you know, I get
okay.
Shit to
well, life. How so. About this, pal? You want to go? We can go.
Why is it that every time I pull out a weapon, you always pull out something bigger?
Because I'm the bigger man. I may not be the stronger man, but I'm the bigger man.
You know, it's a good thing we're not Vikings or some other medieval warriors, because we would actually have to use these on each other, and that would hurt.
Yeah, and I'd freaking go medieval on you.
Yeah, anyway.
Good dog. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, welcome to another episode of the Sons of History podcast. I'm Dustin Bass.
And I'm Alan Joaquim, and I actually cut my finger
exactly
with that hatchet.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a tough hatchet.
Tough hatchet? No, how about you don't know how to wield an axe, even like a child-sized play school axe?
Is this a hatchet or a tomahawk? I always wondered.
I don't know. I guess it depends on where you are in the world.
Anyway, so, you know, next time, man.
Yeah, next time, keep the cover on it and protect yourself. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we got a fun show for you. Speaking of Vikings, this is going to be a really cool conversation. Man, what a terrible time to live. Then, and also now.
Well, yeah, there's a lot going on.
Exactly. What a terrible time we're having.
Yeah, the medieval period, yeah. All the mud and the dungeons and the pestilence.
And the slight cuts from the axe. Tough stuff. Yeah, not easy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, we're going to bring on a guest, but before we do...
Let's do This Week in History.
All right, well, my choice for This Week in History actually has nothing to do with Vikings, but it does have a lot to do with what is going on now, which I'll get to in just a moment. But April 26th. 1986, over in Ukraine, Chernobyl. If you've never heard of the Chernobyl disaster, that is the nightmare scenario for the world, more or less.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I remember that.
Yeah. I didn't because I was only 5 years old, but I know about it now. Chernobyl, so there was a nuclear power plant, and one of the units, Unit 4, ran into a slight bit of trouble where its reactor really overreacted, exposing the core. All this stuff gets out into the air, creating, there's this massive fire. You got firemen going in, trying to put out the fire. They die within a week.
Yeah.
And because all of this radioactive poison. And this radiation going into their system, like right up close. I was going to mention the movie, but we'll get to that at the end of the show. Just really, really crazy stuff going on. And so this is during obviously the Soviet Union was still around, wouldn't fall until about 5 years. And Gorbachev is in control and he's trying to... I guess they're trying to figure out, okay, how do we ensure that the entire globe, at least the eastern part of the globe, doesn't disintegrate?
Mm-hmm.
And so they work on fixing that. Radioactively, it was spreading out through Belarus, Russia, and Ukraine, and eventually reached as far west as France and Italy. That's how bad it was. Hundreds of, thousands of miles of contaminated forestry. All this stuff, people had to be evacuated, Chernobyl and the surrounding areas. This is hundreds of thousands of people. They're like, up in the middle of the night, hey, you got to go. You got to get out of here. Why? Because you'll melt if you don't, more or less, or your insides will. So they eventually got a cap on it and really shut down the Chernobyl plant altogether. I think they sort of reopened it.
They put a dome around it, like a big dome.
Yeah. So. To protect, obviously to keep it from going out. I think they've put, like, sort of having people go back there I want to say somewhere around 2000 or whatever. But yeah, you talk about just no man's land. And now it is man's land because, or at least Russian man's land, because the Russians have now taken Chernobyl back as of, I think, February 24th.
Yeah, and I was near the Wild. Belarus border, but yeah, I remember that. We, you know, we used to travel to Europe and Asia in those days, just about every year. But I remember we didn't go in 86. You know, we were there in 85, not to Russia or Soviet Union, but no, we'd be in Europe, Lebanon, places like that. And then, we're there in 85, but we didn't make it in 86. Did go in 87, but part of the reason was because we're like going, eek, we're not, summer.
So when y'all were going to go,
summer,
had already happened.
Yeah, because
okay, so you were going to go in the summer.
April, yeah. Okay, and then we'd go in the summer. But
yeah, wise choice, I think.
Yeah, I know. It's no flinching. Or,
yeah, I'm sure your dad was like, limb. Look, Alan, as much as you annoy me, we're staying home.
Yeah, hey, what do you think? I got the little hatchet.
Anyway. China?
Yeah, actually, it was from China. It's probably made with radioactive material. So.
Probably.
No, but I do remember that. So, all right. So, mine is going to be April. Man, you know, do you have a Band-Aid?
Gosh. You're about to bleed out.
I'm telling you. All right. So, mine is going to be April the 25th of 1898. Now, the United States declared war on Spain. It was the start of the Spanish-American War. Now, there had been a lot of tension between U.S. and Spain at the time. You know, we had the Monroe Doctrine. We didn't want any Europeans having empires in the Western Hemisphere. And, you know, the Cubans were, like, not really wanting to be under Spanish dominion. They wanted to be independent. So, you know, we were very sympathetic to the Cubans at that time. So, what happened was that on February the 15th, one of our ships, the USS Maine, blew up in Havana Harbor. And, you know, we had a guy named William Randolph Hearst who had, he liked to sell newspapers. And, you know, war sells newspapers. And, you know, kind of like CNN and, you know,
New York Times, trash.
Other trash. So Hearst was like, you know, pushing.
Pierce Morgan.
They're all pushing for war, and then the Democrats were pushing William McKinley, who was a Republican president. You know, we need to go to war. So, you know, finally he, you know, on April the 25th of 1898, we declared war. Now there was a blockade going on, and Spain, you know, we told Spain they need to get out. They're like, screw you, you know, this is our territory. So. They cut off diplomatic ties with us, and then we started a blockade, and then we had the declaration of war. And, you know, there was a lot of key people in this that became quite famous. You know, Teddy Roosevelt was one of the big ones with his Rough Riders. You had Lord Leonard Wood, who, you know, you had Fort Leonard Wood now. Joseph Wheeler, Admiral George Dewey. So wasn't a very long war. It lasted from April until August. And, you know, when the war ended, we ended up with a vast, you know, overseas empire, practically. We had the Philippines. We had Guam out, you know, in the Mariana Islands. We had Puerto Rico. Now, we did control Cuba for a little bit, you know, but just for a little bit, but then we gave it, and the Cubans have had independence ever since. So, so if you ever wondered, how did we end up with Puerto Rico or Guantanamo Bay or, you know, on Cuba or the Philippines? It was because of that war. We kicked ass big time.
Yeah, so, we did.
George Dewey's ship, you can actually visit that in Philadelphia. I think it's called the Olympia or Olympic, one of the two. But it's actually, I did go visit. I stood on the very spot where.
Very interesting. Yeah, I have a painting of that boat, but I can't find a frame for it.
Okay. Well, can't help you there. No. But do you have Band-Aids? I mean, you know.
Are you done with that? No. All right. That's This Week in History. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we've got Don Hallway. He is the author of The Last Viking. Do not get blood on the pages, you idiot. Anyways, or on anything. This is The Last Viking. It's the true story of King Harald Hardrada, and it is a fascinating read. We've got Don with us, but he's also the author of another book that's coming out, I think, in just a month, which is At the Gates of Rome, The Fall of the Eternal City, A.D. 410. And I'm really looking forward to that one because I love this book. So we've got Don on the line. He is the possessor of probably the coolest background of somebody that we've had on the show. Don, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm well. How are you guys?
We're good. We are good. We're really looking forward to this conversation.
I'll point out that that's not a Zoom background. That's the real stuff back there.
That is the real stuff because you reenact this stuff, don't you?
I do. Typically, I do more 17th century than Viking stuff. To go out and sell the book, I've been at a couple of Viking events, and one of the guys told me that I look like I'm from Viking corporate headquarters, so I think I have to work on my impression a little bit.
Yeah, you better believe it.
Well, I like it. I mean, that's the real thing. I thought that was a... like a, you know, like what you see behind us, you know, fake.
Yeah, this is not a real bookshelf. Those aren't real books.
Don't make me start swinging the axe around over here.
Oh, man. Speaking of swinging an axe, that's pretty much my feeling every episode that we do. Just right there.
Do I irritate you? Do I irritate you that much?
Don't I, mean, I really, irritate really? You that much?
Yes, you do.
Okay, there you go. All right. Hey, Don, so...
But we're the best of friends.
It's lucky there's no axe in the room over there.
Exactly. I can't get a dagger? I can't get a dagger?
Actually, right? No. You know what? I do have a hatchet with me.
Yeah, you also
I should
have...
go get my hatchet.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah. All right, well.
This would officially be our last episode.
In honor of our guest, you know.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Don, I recently finished your book, The Last Viking, and very cool book because it is a life that reads like fiction. And so with that, it's a really, really fun read because this guy is, you know, whenever we think of, I guess, adventures and going on adventures, and I think of myself, like I've done things that are daring. I've done things that are adventurous. You go on trips, you've gone pretty much all over the world. And we look at our lives and we're like, man, that's pretty neat. But compared to this guy and people like him, obviously it doesn't even compare. So give us a rundown of who Harald Hardrada was and why do you call him the Last Viking?
Well, he got that name in modern times because his death at the Battle of Stamford Bridge in 1066 is generally taken to be the end of the Viking Age. He launched the last great invasion of England in 1066, and he was part of that whole tumultuous year that of William the Conqueror and King Harald, the last king of the Anglo-Saxons. It was all three kings basically battling over England that year. But before he got there, Harald led a life of adventure that is just exciting. He was like a real-life fantasy hero. I mean, he escaped battle as a teenager when he was wounded, went into exile, went to Russia, went to Constantinople and fought for the Byzantine Empire as part of the Varangian Guard. He romanced an empress, he married a princess, returned home a rich man and basically bought half the kingdom of Norway and then waged a 15-year war with Denmark. He just lived a Viking's life and he died like a Viking as well.
Yeah, isn't there a song? Yo-ho, yo-ho, a Viking life for me. You know what? I shouldn't even have said that. That was on par with a lot of your jokes. I apologize. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, then it was funny. All right, the question I was going to ask, and there's a reason why I'm asking, because I'm going to follow up, or as Saki would say, I'm going to circle back here.
Circle back.
Was he a Christian? And if he was, what kind of a Christian? Was he Catholic? And how did he get involved with the Byzantine Empire? Because that it's hard to imagine that, when he was around, the Byzantine Empire was still in existence. So
He was a Christian. Most of the Vikings had been converted to Christianity by that time. Even a couple of his predecessors were already Christian. But define Christian. I mean, there was a different kind of Christian in those days. He would not be what you would call a religious fanatic these days. Christianity to him was useful as a means of ruling his subjects. And believe me, he completely disregarded the Ten Commandments whenever it was convenient for him. He was he would have been technically part of what we would call the Catholic Church. The Catholics and Protestants, of course, hadn't split by that time. And even in his youth, the Eastern Church and Western Church had not yet split. But Harald, when he was over towards Byzantium, they had a more Eastern Orthodox way of going about things. And I believe it was in 1055 that the Eastern Church and the Western Church finally had the Great Schism and decided they couldn't be the same thing anymore. So by that time, he had returned to Norway and actually brought in some of the Eastern Orthodox priests who wanted to preach to the Norwegians. This really irritated some of the Catholic bishops in Bremen at the time, who thought that Norway should be, you know, part of their diocese, but Harald was the king and he couldn't care less what they thought.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I sort of like you couldn't care less what I think. I love you, man.
You know, I do care about some of the stuff. Now, our religious aspects, we were a little, I mean, we're both Christian,
exactly.
But
you don't even know. Yeah. That's sad. Hey, speaking of, so he's involved with the Byzantine Empire. Give a little bit on his relationship with the famous Empress Zoe.
Well, there's probably two sides to that. I mean, I tried to take all the possible accounts that I can find of Harald's life, which was the Viking sagas and the Byzantine accounts. He appears in their accounts, but to the Byzantines, he was not a Byzantine. So, I mean, he rose to incredible lengths of power for a Viking in that time period, but to the Byzantines, he was still a foreign mercenary. So he's mentioned by name, but they don't talk about a lot of the stuff that I talk about in the book. You have to go to the Viking accounts for that. And then look to see if in the Byzantine accounts. So he joined the Varangian Guard, which was an all Viking unit of mercenaries that served as bodyguards for the emperor, but also served as an elite fighting force. And basically, as soon as he came down and went into the capital to join the Varangians, he came to the attention of Zoe at that point. She was a powerful and dangerous woman. She was probably 30 or 40 years older than he was. She was said to have murdered, at that point that they met, she was said to have murdered her previous husband. And while they were together, she was said to have murdered the second husband. But she took him on as a protector, I think, is the best way to say it. He was coming up through the ranks, and these people were going through some turbulent political times. And, you know, turbulent politics back then was conducted at sword point. I mean, people got killed pretty regularly. And in Byzantium, I mean, not just killed, I mean, blinded and, you know, gruesomely tortured. She needed somebody on her side. Harald was a mercenary. She took him on in that function, but they became lovers. If you believe the Viking accounts, I mean, I took a lot of that. That's what they said. So that's what I repeated. I mean, there's probably a certain amount of Viking BS in the stories, but a lot of it's backed up. The things that he said that he did, there's enough in the Byzantine accounts to back up what he says, so you can kind of take him at his word on much of the rest of it.
So, not a woman to be trusted, obviously. And in your book, there's sort of this, like he will not take more or less a knee, but he'll go to bed with her more or less. But she eventually turns on him. I want to start from that point. In your book, you more or less suggest that she turned on him. He's imprisoned. How did he go from being imprisoned with, I think, two of his closest friends and allies and Vikings?
Olfin.
Yeah.
Outdoor.
Right. Yeah. And go from that imprisonment to escape to eventually becoming the king of Norway?
Well, he helped Zoe through basically a palace revolution, and she came out on top, so they were together, but this was when her second husband was dead. So she needed to bring in another husband as emperor, because women weren't empresses, ruled as queens, but they didn't rule. You needed a man as an emperor. So she brought in a low-level bureaucrat, basically, closer to her age than Harold was. But this guy, Constantine the Ninth, had his own baggage. He had a girlfriend, a mistress that he didn't want to give up. And at that point, Zoe didn't care. She's like, this is a marriage of convenience. We're not in it for romance or anything like that. Bring her on in. But nobody expected what happened. Her name was Maria. And when she met Harold, there was instantly sparks between them, and they conducted an affair. And this is all coming straight out of the old Viking sagas. I mean, this is repeated on a couple of different accounts. So when Zoe found out about this, she more or less turned on Harold at that point, and basically cooked up a bunch of reasons to have him thrown in prison. He escaped sort of a semi-legendary tale that the ghost of Olaf, his brother who had been killed at Stiklestad, appeared to a local woman in her dreams and sent her to help him get out of prison. But I think the reason he got out was because he was covered by the Kievan Rus. The Russians had come down to launch an invasion of Constantinople, and that sort of gave Harold the cover to get out of town with his life. He ended up taking Maria along with him, basically, and once he was out of prison, invaded the palace and busted her out of her room and put her on a ship, and they escaped Constantinople. But they both knew that it wasn't going to work out in the long term. She was a warm weather Byzantine. She was not going to want to be a cold weather princess of Norway, and they split up, and he sent her back.
And so, yeah, so he leaves, and then he's heading back home, more or less. And he's, I guess you would say, filthy rich. And now he's ready to, I guess, take his somewhat rightful place on the throne.
At that point, he had been fighting for Byzantium for better part of 10 years, rounded off 10 years, accumulating loot every time they took a city by storm. He would have his loot collected and sent north to Grand Prince Yaroslav and of Kiev, who kept it in trust for him. So when Harold finally did have to get out, he was reputed to be the wealthiest man in the north, and was able to basically, I wouldn't want to say bought a bride, but he was able to marry Yaroslav's daughter, Elizaveta, the princess of Kievan Rus, and took her back to Norway as his queen.
Now I'm going to play a major what if scenario on you, or it's going to be kind of a couple of what if scenarios here. Okay. And that was one of the reasons why I asked you the question about his faith. And I'm bringing this question based on, and I know I always butcher his name. He's the historian, Heller Belloc. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know how to
just pick one.
You know who I'm talking about. You know,
I know who you're talking about.
Okay. Well, He one of his books, he stated that, you know, William the Conqueror brought Catholicism to England, or he brought Christianity to England, which to him was the same thing, because England really wasn't much of a really good Christian country. So now here comes the what if questions. First, why did Tostig? I know Tostig probably needed King Harold's strength to beat his brother, Harold Godwinson. What if he didn't ask Harold? Would Tostig have even rebelled against Harold? Would they have united against William the Conqueror? What if Harold and Tostig won? Would they have been able to beat William the Conqueror? And then you just look at all the scenarios that took place since then. You know, we have the English line going all the way back to the Normans when William the Conqueror took over, and what it meant to the United States. You know, after the Protestant Reformation, tell us what, because so many things had one thing changed. Had Tostig not asked, had Tostig and and if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Head Tostig and Harold beaten Harold Godwinson. Take it from there. What's your thought on it? Because there's a lot of different rivers you can follow at this point.
Right. First of all, I would disagree that that England was not Christian before William got there. I mean, there were cathedrals all over England before, well before then, probably for 300 years at least. So I would disagree with the whole thing about Anglo-Saxon England not being Christian. Now, again, were they Christian the way we regard Christians? I don't know. There was a lot of pagan ceremonies that were basically just had Christianity tacked on top of them. That's true, but I would say that the English were Christian. As far as Tostig and Harald Hardrada was actually like Tostig's third choice for invading England. I mean, Tostig had been banished basically the year before, the winter of 1065, for being a bad earl. He had been brutalizing his people in Northumbria until they basically rebelled against him. And the king at that time was Edward the Confessor, and Tostig's brother Harold was sort of the man behind the throne. He was the duke, the under king, they called him. He was really the power behind the throne. Edward sent him north to resolve this Tostig situation, and Harold talked to the people up there and basically said, gee, you're right, Tostig's pretty terrible earl, he needs to go, and basically banished his own brother from England. So Tostig spent the spring and summer of 1066 basically being a pirate. He recruited a bunch of men and tried raiding up into Northumbria and basically got his butt kicked and thrown back into the English Channel. He actually asked William the Conqueror to help him join a rebellion and take the English throne. Well, by that time, William was already cooking up his own invasion plans, and he decided he didn't need Tostig. Tostig went up to King Svein of Denmark, who was his distant relative, and asked him to join the rebellion, to come and invade England. Svein had been fighting Harald Hardrada for 15 years at that point, and he knew as soon as he went to England that Harald would sweep in and take Denmark from behind him, so he wasn't interested in that either. So finally, Tostig ended up in Norway, and Harald, as I said, had been fighting Svein for 15 years, trying to basically reunite the North Sea Empire of Canute the Great, which had been England, Norway, and Denmark, which fell apart after Knut died. But so Harald was trying to do that, and having not achieved that with Denmark, he thought, okay, here's a chance to do this with England. Let's join Tostig and go invade. As far as if things had turned out differently at Stamford Bridge, let's say Harald takes his whole army. For one thing, he left a large fraction of his men at the ships because he thought he was going to a hostage exchange, was not expecting to meet the entire English army, which force marched 200 some miles from London up to York in basically 4 days. I mean, one of the greatest military feats in medieval history, as far as I'm concerned, totally caught Harald and Tostig by surprise. If they had managed to beat Harald Godwinson at Stamford Bridge, William would have invaded anyway, because they were up in the north. William would have come in from the south. I think England would have been divided. I think Harald and Tostig would have chosen their moment to meet William, on their own terms somewhere down in the Midlands and fight a battle down there. And which way that went, I don't know. It's still going to be the same kind of fight as Hastings was, because the Anglo-Saxons fought the way the Vikings did. They fought on foot. They would ride the horses to battle, but they would fight on foot. Whereas the Normans had that French tradition of chivalry, cavalry, and they brought their horses in and fought with horses on the battlefield. And horses against infantry are typically going to win. So I'm thinking William still comes out on top.
Okay, well, because one of the reasons why I think Harald Godwinson lost to William, based on some of the works that I've read, they were tired. They had just fought it was less than three weeks from Stamford Bridge down to Hastings, and that had to have worn out his men, so that when they finally fought William, and you know, I mean, if I remember, Harold Godwinson had the, they were on the higher ground.
Correct.
Okay. So for me, I'm thinking, okay, had they not done that forced march in 3 weeks, they might not have been as tired. They might have actually been able to beaten William. And so if you look at, you know, Harold and Hadrada and Tostig fought, probably would have been on better terms. William wouldn't have been fighting in a tired army. So,
right. Know. Yeah, I agree with that. As far as Harold Godwinson, as I said, marched the whole way up to that's basically the length of England, not modern England, if you include Scotland, but I mean, basically almost up to the Scottish border in a couple of days. And then he was only there for a couple of days when he found out William had invaded. So they had to march the whole way back down. And I agree totally that they were just totally bushed at that point.
That would have made, think about all the differences.
Oh, tons of differences. And, you know, and just the one decision to leave a majority of your men and pretty much all of your gear at the ships. I mean, you're fighting. That's what was so crazy at the end of the book. And it's funny, I almost said, I don't want to give a spoiler, but it's 1,000 years of history. So if people don't know yet, this is not a spoiler.
Spoiler alert, Harold dies at the end.
He does get it in the end. Yeah. So, but you're going into this fight with no armor, more or less. And it's the ending. There's so much in this story that is adventurous, and the ending is sort of the perfect ending. If it's for the last Viking, and the Vikings are known for just going around destroying and plundering and pillaging, this is the ending that was scripted, you know, say by God, like this, we're going to give you a real Viking end, to the Vikings themselves and to Harold in particular. It's really fascinating.
I totally agree. When I first read this guy's story, I was a kid, and it was just a couple of paragraphs about, it was a book about Vikings. It wasn't about Harold, but they mentioned him just briefly, like bullet points of the stuff that he did. And it was just like, wow, what a life that guy led. And then when I began writing, I always wanted to write about him, but I was a magazine writer for years and years. And I just thought, a magazine article can't possibly do this guy justice. So then finally my agent came around and said, you know, Vikings are really hot right now with all these TV shows and everything. And he said, do you know anything about Vikings? And I was like, let me tell you a story. I mean, it's like, I've been waiting all my life to write this book.
Well, the book is The Last Viking. Don, you've written a superb piece on Harold. Harold Hardrada. And I want to ask my last question, because if people read the book and get the same, not emotional roller coaster, that's stupid, but just the view of how you see this person, and it's like, man, it's a really cool guy. And then later on, I'm like, this guy's sick. I mean, he is a really, really cruel person. And then at the end, you're like, wow, what an incredible ending, right? And I want to point to your last page on your book, and it's just something that Alan and I discuss quite often on the show, and this is how to view people that are in our history, how we should view them and not place them on the same moral standard as what we have today, right? And you write this, the hindsight of 1,000 years offers little clarity when none but the dead can know the ultimate truth. Who can say what our descendants a millennium hence will make of us? The study of the past really is like peering into a dense fog. It's our futile efforts to make sense of the present, however, that leave so many of us wistful for the simple day of the sword. How should we view King Harold? And when people may say, oh, don't praise this guy, this guy was terrible, what is your response to something like that?
I would agree with him. At the end, he was terrible. I mean, he's the perfect example of absolute power corrupting absolutely. He started out with basically nothing, and at the end, he was, they called him the hard ruler, you know, the tyrant. Nobody called him that to his face, but that's what they called him. And yeah, I agree that people have to be judged by the standards of their time. You know, right and wrong are, I think there are absolute standards, but boy, how do you put this? People view those standards differently depending on their circumstances. A lot of the stuff that Harold did that we would describe as terrible would not be unexpected, would actually be expected of him in those times. You know, so yeah, he comes out bad from our viewpoint, and certainly bad from a lot of the viewpoint of a lot of people back in that time, but everybody understood what he was doing. He was not doing anything particularly sinister by Viking standards. So by to use those rules, not as terrible as people would think.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, we've had, you and I, we've had discussions about Achilles. When I read what Achilles did, I'm like, man, he was not a nice guy, but he was praised. I mean, I know Hector had, he had competition with Hector as to who was the more noble, but Achilles was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
But to judge him by today's standards, he would be banished.
You're banned.
You're banned. The Banish Inquisition would. You're out of here.
He would definitely not make it on Twitter. I should say that. Okay.
Yeah.
You're out of here. Well, hey Don, it was fantastic talking to you. Thanks so much for writing this awesome book. This is, ladies and gentlemen, go get it. The Last Viking. It's the true story of King Harald Hardrada, and that is Don Hallway. Don, thank you again.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Before you leave, is there anything that you want to point out about what you have behind you? Any thing in particular? This is something that's pretty cool.
Well, let me see. The set of armor back here over my right shoulder is a Byzantine set of armor. That's what they would have worn in the East when Harald was down there fighting. It's called lamellar armor with the scales. And if you can see the one over my right shoulder, that's not too well lit. That's a set of chainmail that would have been more Western, more what the Vikings would have worn. But that thing is heavy as all get out. I don't wear it all that much.
Yeah, your shield behind you apparently is the same shield that's on here. It's just yours is white and black, and this one is red, blue, and black.
Yeah, Harald's flag was called Land Waster, had a black raven on a white field. The raven on a white field was a long time Viking symbol. That was the typical Viking flag that they carried for hundreds of years. If you've ever watched The Last Viking, Ubba, the Viking in that part of the Great Heathen Army, which is a couple hundred years before Harald's time, he had a raven flag. It was symbolic of Odin. The raven was symbolic of Odin, so that was the Viking symbol.
Cool. Yeah. Well, The Last Viking is out. I'll give you a plug here. You've got a new book coming out next month, I believe, correct?
Yeah, beginning of May. It's called At the Gates of Rome. It's about the fall of Rome in 410 AD. Particularly from the viewpoint of the two main protagonists, which was Stilicho, as far as I'm concerned, the last great general, Roman general, and Alaric, who was king of the Goths, who was the man who actually conquered or sacked Rome in 410 AD. But the two of them had a pretty interesting on and off relationship for a generation leading up to that. Started out as enemies, ended up as compatriots on the same side in the battlefield, ended up as enemies again, made peace, and were basically trying to reunite the whole Eastern and Western Empire at the end when Stilicho was basically betrayed by his political enemies and things sort of fell apart.
Well, I look forward to reading that one. That sounds pretty fascinating. Well, anything else you want to add?
No, I think I was going to ask about the horns, but then I was told that, yeah, that didn't exist. So.
No horns, no wings. If I had showed up like that at the Viking reenactment units, they'd throw me out.
All right. Well, okay. So if we're gonna read a book, we should read your book. But do you have any realistic movies or TV shows that you'd recommend that actually show what life was like in that, you know, for the
that movie, The Northman, just came out yesterday, and I'm intrigued to see that. But I hear it's very realistic. I haven't seen it yet. I think it's basically going back to the story of Hamlet, Shakespeare's Hamlet. Hamlet was actually Amleth. He was a Danish prince. I'm not sure how realistic or fictitious he was, but this is basically a remake of his story. So I'm anxious to see that. I'm not so hot on a lot of the Viking stuff that's out. The Vikings Valhalla series that came on Netflix, I think it was about a month or two ago. Harald Hardrada is actually in that, but they start out in the year 1002, and he's already like 30 years old, where he wasn't even born until 1015. So it's like, okay, right away, just throw out everything, and I don't want to watch the rest of it.
The one that you said that's coming up, it's called Northman?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's because Northman, it just hit theaters, I think, yesterday.
Okay, because I remember, and I went to go see this in the 70s, Lee Majors played... The movie was called The Norseman. I don't know. Did you see that?
$6 million man he was in.
Help. Well, yeah, but we were like, okay, well, we love Lee Majors, so we went to go see The Norseman. And I remember my dad fell asleep. He hated the movie.
He would
not go see a movie with us after that.
I can't see Lee Majors as a Viking. I just can't.
Well, you know what?
I can't visualize
what's
that.
Funny, what's
World
funny?
World War II vet? Yeah. Sure.
What's funny is my dad wouldn't go see a movie. He all right, we'll go see because of Lee Majors. So he saw it and he thought The Norseman was boring. So he's like, I'm not going to go see another movie again. And then some friends of his said, no, we're going to take this one movie. It's really good. It's called The Crying Game. And then that was it. He's like, no, never.
That sealed the deal right there. Yeah,
that sealed it.
I was always a big fan of the movie The Vikings with Kirk Douglas and Tony Curtis back in, I think it was like 57 or something like that. I don't know if you've ever seen that. You know, again, not something to look at for, it's a movie. It's not a documentary and you got to take it that way. But I always thought that was a pretty good movie.
All right, we'll take it for that.
Yeah.
I know they were united for Spartacus.
So your dad more or less cried himself to sleep on that one. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he was like, you know, when he's like, all right, Alan, if you're going to date a girl, you better, you better check.
You better check. Make sure you don't have the nanny. Anyways, all right, Don.
Let me just say for The Last Viking, there's free sample chapters at the website, lastvikingbook.com. And for the new one coming out, there's free sample chapters at the Gates of Rome or just gatesofrome.com.
Very cool. All right. We'll check it out. Thanks again, Don. It was a pleasure.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Well, I got to say that answered some of my questions because, I'm a what if type of guy. Mm-hmm. What if William the Conqueror didn't conquer? You know, would he even be called that? Every English king and queen since 1066 has, you know, they're all descendants of William the Conqueror. So, mm-hmm. you know, imagine the line, you know, would there have been pilgrims who came to America? Would America have been in English? Would it, you know, I mean, obviously they still would have been in England, but it would have been a little different, vastly different. There would have been a Reformation, which would have led to the pilgrims to begin with. So interesting subject, because I've always been a fan of the history of King Harald. I never did call him Hardrada, you said.
Yeah.
I never knew him as King or Harald Hardrada. But
see, that's but what this... I forgot to ask him that, because it's his, I think his official name is Harald Sigurdsson or something like that. Yeah.
But he kind of I didn't study much on the history of that king. Prior to, I just knew about the story of the battle of Stamford Bridge and mm-hmm. how important that was, and how, you know, he was the reason why Harold Godwinson had to go all the way north, fight him, then had to go all the way south in 3 weeks and fight William the Conqueror, and it changed history. So I enjoyed talking to him because he really kind of, it's not so much filled in the blanks, but gave you the history of of that king of Norway that that I really didn't study much on.
Yeah, it was a really cool conversation. And I'm going to just say this. I'm proud of you for holding it together despite losing all that blood.
Well, you know.
Because I know you started getting lightheaded, because that's a deep cut. First cut is the deepest, as Sheryl Crow would say.
Well, you know, since I'm one of those woke types that has to go to a safe space, I happen to be carrying one of those little diaper pins. So, so I carry diapers and
very interesting.
My safe space.
I'm done. All right, book and movie recommendation.
Let me guess. I know I'm not going to get any blood on it. I promise. Okay, but I'm sure we're both unanimous.
Okay.
On the,
I'm just making sure, because
now I'd put in there's blood on,
because you're always like, oh, take the cover off when you're reading the book and stuff, and yet you're pouring blood, gallons of blood, all over that book.
Well, anyways, you know, Madison's been.
I know it's a Viking book, but it doesn't need all that.
Madison's been licking. Come here, Madison. Lick my hand.
Wasn't there somebody in the Bible? It was the homeless man and the dogs licked his sores. But there was also Jezebel when she fell out the window and the dogs licked up her blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you would go with the Jezebel quite easily. All right, so The Last Viking, if you haven't seen it yet, or if you haven't bought it yet, encourage you to go buy it, especially if you like one of two things, Viking history or English history. Or actually three things, Byzantine history, one of those three. And if it's all three, well, you are in luck, and this is an Osprey publishing book. So Osprey is freaking awesome. If you've never gone over and checked them out,
Osprey publishing or something. I go to their website quite frequently.
It's good stuff. Now, my movie recommendation. I sort of mentioned this earlier that I would mention it during the book and movie recommendation. It's an HBO series called Chernobyl. This is an incredible series, and it has Jared Harris and Stellan Skarsgård. I think it's like an eight part series. Really good, from the moment the explosion happens to the time they cover everything.
Like,
but it's really good. Yeah,
it's not a fictional.
No, there's
there
a
like
lot
a fictional
of
Chernobyl
really
thing?
Good information. I think there's like a new one that came out, and I saw it's like. I'm not messing with that. Anyways, but yeah, that's, if you haven't watched the Chernobyl series on HBO, very good.
Well, I am going to pick the same book, The Last Viking. You know, before I get into this, I noticed Stephen Harding. That's not the Stephen Harding that we're in.
No.
A different Stephen Harding. Mm-hmm. Okay, because that's...
Yeah, one has a G, one doesn't.
Yeah, Harden is what? Stephen L. Harden.
Blood all over
I
that.
I don't...
Are you freaking kidding me?
Come here, Madison. You're not doing your job.
Lick! She's licking herself.
Okay, so my book, The Last Viking, and has some great history. Talks about the man who fought Harald Godwinson and lost.
Yeah.
And but no, I mean, this really is a good book. I went through it. I didn't read it cover to cover like you did, because I just didn't. I'm not a fast reader like you.
No.
But from what I read.
But you retain way more than I do. You have that ability. Me,
oh, thank
I,
God.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
And speaking of losing at Stamford Bridge, there is a really cool twist, at that part, which you will love.
Okay.
Ironic.
All right, now for my movie of the week, it's, you know how I mentioned for the.
Lee Majors?
Norseman. No. That movie sucked. That movie sucked. I mean, it kept my dad from ever going to a movie again until The Crying Game, which
was a
bad decision. So, all right. But no, for the movie is going to be, and I have done this one before. It's called The Rough Riders. I did it before, but, you know, since this was the, you know, April 25th, 1898 was when we declared war with Spain, Spanish-American War. The Rough Riders. Now, that movie came out in 1997. It was actually a miniseries. So it had quite a few people on here. And I am going to go through that list because I think it's
Tom Berenger.
Tom Berenger's on
Teddy
there.
Teddy Roosevelt. Hmm? That's who he plays, Teddy Roosevelt.
He plays Teddy Roosevelt, yeah. That's right. Then you have Sam Elliott. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves Sam Elliott.
Oh, yeah.
Dale Dye, he plays Leonard Wood. You know Dale Dye.
Nope.
You know Dale Dye, he's got the mustache. He's been in every war movie. He's the guy that has made war movies better.
Okay.
Captain Dale Dye. Let's see, Brian Keith. Come on.
Of course.
You know that movie about the twins?
Yeah, the twins.
Yeah, the twins. Yeah, was it the, you know who I'm talking about?
Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, the Parent Trap. He was also in that Buffy's, whatever, the
Vampire Slayer. Affair,
Arlie M. Ernie. Oh, God, I can't believe I said that. Arlie Ernie. Ermy.
What are you talking
the
about?
The sergeant, the drill sergeant.
Arlie.
Yeah, Arlie Ermy. I can never pronounce his name correctly. That's why he choked me. There's a photo of him choking me. George Hamilton. He played Hearst. Then you had Brad Johnson was kind of like the narrator.
So I think this was a week ago that I said, hey, you no longer go through the IMDb list.
Well, yeah, I know, but see,
and here you are going
but,
through it.
Here's
reverting
why.
Back because to your terrible
the
ways.
The last one, it's for you women. Chris Noff, the guy who plays Big from Sex and the City, he's in that movie too.
Yeah,
so.
He is.
Yeah, so it's now it's not completely accurate, but it's mostly accurate. So,
it's mostly accurate.
Yeah, you get
kind of, that's good.
You get kind of the
creative juice, license.
So. Yeah, which happens quite a bit with Hollywood.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, that brings our show to an end. Do you want us quickly go through?
Yes, we have YouTube, subscribe. We have like us on Facebook. We have follow us on Instagram, we're on Rumble, and we have our own website, www.thesonsofhistory.com.
We really should do that at the beginning of the show.
You think so?
Yeah. I don't think many people get to the very end of the show. Well, in fact, I would guess probably less than 0.000. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that brings our show to an end. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, really, I need a Band-Aid.